Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this Sunday's version of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. I've got a little change in plan today. We were planning on talking about cyber security, and it was going to be an interesting show. Mr. AI Wynn, my cyber expert, had diagrammed out the pathway of the magically exploding pagers and walkie-talkies this past week in the Middle East, in Lebanon to be specific. But in any event, he was called to duty to the front line, and he's stuck out of town today, so he didn't have access to a good cell connection. So we're going to punt, and we'll come back next week, complete with a diagram. I'll get it up on the news site to show the pathway that project took. It's pretty interesting. I tell you, the Israelis are a creative and a very patient people. But in any event, so we're back to real estate and taxes, etc. for the current show, and hope you're not too disappointed. I know I had a couple people that told me yesterday they were looking forward to the cybersecurity show, so stay tuned. I know, you know, normally at the top of the show I always remind people, please, if you hear something you like, strategy you like, tax rule you think you might like or don't like, don't just assume what you heard is correct. Please check with your existing advisors, and let's make certain that you heard correctly and or interpreted correctly for your unique facts and circumstances. Let me get some coffee here. My throat has been, it disappeared a couple weeks ago, but I thought it was back, so I apologize for having a hoarse throat. For those of you that don't have advisors, feel free to go to our website at BeAPlannerShow.com. Go to the forms link, and if you'll do me the favor of filling out step one, form one, give me at least that much information. I'll be happy to have a phone call with you and see how we might help you achieve your objectives or not. You know, if you're not a prospect in terms of what you have to work with, tax-wise, investment-wise, etc., we won't waste your time. I spent some time this week trying to catch up on some articles out on the news page of the Be a Planner site, and if you'll take a look there on Be a Planner Show, I'm sorry, I said Be a Planner. I do have both sites, BeAPlanner.com and Be a Planner Show, and we put different things on each of those sites. We do link them together, so you shouldn't have any problem navigating. Just pick the one you want and go to the relevant navigational tab, typically at the top, and you'll be able to find. But in any event, on the news page, I've been saying for a while, I've been pointing out that there's quite a few indicators that would indicate there's a growing number of people that you would otherwise think could rent. The article talks about a growing number of millionaires that are opting for renting over buying. And, you know, what they figured out, and I think I've been saying this for a while, is the value that you can attain in terms of the amenity set, the lifestyle, the flexibility, etc., has for a while now been better if you were renting rather than buying. And that's not going to change too quick. Although we are seeing the average rental rate looks like it may have finally gotten to the bottom and it's heading back up. I know I took a quick peek at my reporting data that we subscribe to, and most areas of Houston now have, if you look at the annual time frame, so year on year, as an example, in Houston, Beltway 8, I-45 South, that market has had an annualized growth of 10.1%. It's had absorption of 1.8%. So those are two good indicators. There's still some other areas in town that are a little bit better on the absorption front, but not the annualized growth rate. And that's key. That's good. So we've got, yeah, we may have seen the bottom. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see with the interest rate decrease. I'm sorry, the rate cut that we had earlier this week. I don't know that it's going to move the needle much right away for mortgage rates, but it sure is a positive sign in some respects. We're not out of the range of possibilities on the big R word. That would not be rate cut, that would be recession. And I think the Fed has thrown a very aggressive hat in the ring, if you will, but they're still worried about certain other factors that could cause recession. The Med Center, I was just going to mention, that's got a high annualized growth rate of 6.0%, same 1.8% of market absorption. But Katy, Cinco Ranch, and Waterside has had 3.1% market absorption. So they had more units to absorb, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. So anyway, but back to let's take a look at that first article on the list. Who are the millionaire renters? And let me go into that article and let's take a quick peek. And, you know, I understand they're throwing the word millionaire around, so don't assume that, you know, it's only those that can't afford a home are the ones renting. In fact, the subtitle on this article is they could probably buy a house for cash if only they could find something they liked. And so there's a lot of reasons people rent. And as the article begins, the frequently told story that younger people often rent these days because they want the flexibility and freedom to avoid maintenance issues, move as the winds take them, has sounded somewhat contrived. How many people with the full financial ability to buy a home when prices and mortgages are really high really make the conscious choice to rent? And the Wall Street Journal had an article that they referenced that says that there are more than you might think, at least if you include the relatively small but growing number of millionaires who rent by choice. Analyzing data from, it's a data think tank, IPUMS, at the University of Minnesota, the paper said that between 2013 and 2017, the number of households with more than $750,000 in income that rented was 8.4%. That's a pretty big number. And it grew 10.5% from 2018 to 2022. So COVID and before COVID, the trend had already started. Using data from the Federal Reserve Survey of Consumer Finances, the journal also calculated that households with a top 5% net worth have seen 5% who rent, a number that has doubled over the last 15 years. So the trend is definitely real, and as it continues, the article says that perhaps the reason is partly the greater number of millionaires. As you know, we've had quite the run-up over the last, 5 to 10 years in that set, that millionaire set. So that expands the number of people, obviously, that might include people who would rather rent. There are a reported 7.43 million people in the U.S. who have investable assets of at least $1 million, not including your primary residence, collectibles, or consumer durables, according to a CNBC report. You know, that's a lot of people with a lot of money, although $1 million is not $1 million. And if they're counting the assets in your 401 and IRAs, as you know, I've been admonishing that if you've got money in retirement accounts that's pre-tax, it hasn't been taxed yet, you don't have $1 million. You've got, I'm going to tell you, you've got about half. Ultimately, it's probably going to be even less than half once the U.S. budget expenditure exceeds the collections by more than we do now even. And when we can't pay 100% of the interest on the debt, when we'll no longer be able to pay that, which it's looking like it'll be in the 2028 to 2030 time frame, that's when you're going to see more than just a recession. You're going to see a massive depression. And so we keep telling you, you got to convert to Roth. You have to be prepared. You've got a few years left, which may not be enough if you've got $2 to $3 million and you're trying to avoid the top tax bracket. And remember, as I say almost every week, the current tax brackets are on sale. They have to go up. It's simply the math involved. We've got Democrats that want to do away with, or they want to tax the wealth of our population. This group, this 7.4 plus million that have $1 million. Of course, they're saying they only want to go after billionaires, but you watch. If they were to gain a majority or enough people, because remember, the Republicans don't stick together. So if you've got a slim majority like we do now, that's no assurance that you can hold the line on a attempt, if we did have a Democratic administration, to raise taxes in a way that we wouldn't like. And I'm not suggesting we should not raise taxes. Unfortunately, we got to do something to turn around the pathway we're on. And, you know, if we're not going to cut spending dramatically, we're going to have to cut taxes. I mean, it's basically a bilateral type choice you got, or it's unilateral, I guess, in this case. You could do some of both, but, you know, the reality is taxing the wealthy is not going to move the needle nearly enough on the cumulative debt that's causing our problem. We're now, if you have watched the news lately, there's more and more discussion about the fact that, you know, this is a special month in the federal budgetary cycle. This is the end of the fiscal year, September 30th coming up. And it's another, there's another important deadline coming up, is we've got to agree on some sort of fix for the current continuing resolution that's still in play. It's getting ready to expire. And you may have noticed Speaker Johnson has been pushing to get a voting act in with the funding. You know, they're trying to get a voter ID, which is entirely reasonable in my mind. I still don't understand how we can place so much emphasis on identifying who we're doing assorted programs with. You know, we're putting a lot of emphasis on student borrowers right now. You may understand it's probably going to fail, the forgiveness of student debt. It's already, the Supreme Court's already ruled against it. And the Biden administration is trying to find any little nook or cranny they can slam. I think the latest proposal is $168 billion in either payment deferral or elimination altogether. It's a lot of money. But in any event, I think it's interesting to watch this trend towards millionaire renters. And, of course, they're not renting the classic C-grade apartment in most cases. They're renting more upscale units because these are people that would otherwise be buying luxury homes. So still, it's good. It helps drive the market. It helps with absorption. And in many cases, they're able to get a much higher amenity set than they would even be able to afford. Even the millionaire class has limits, right? But there is the question of turnover of existing housing stock, which has been low, as many people who have low mortgages can't or don't want to pay much higher rates for mortgages for a new home. So they don't sell and move. Other costs, the other thing that, boy, does it get overlooked in a lot of these comparisons, is the cost of home ownership. You've got insurance that's gone through the roof in many areas in the country. Property taxes, maintenance, and utilities have also risen, taking a bigger bite out of someone's bank account. So, and then, of course, you've got the normal time and inconvenience that you have and, you know, when you go to move. So even those who could spend the money may not want to because they'd rather keep the extra cash in other investments, excuse me, that pay more into their net worth than the slow appreciation of a purchased home would, especially in some of the Texas markets. Let's see, is there anything else? That's pretty much the gist of this article. Let's do this. Let me try to get my voice back here on a break. Why don't we take our first break here now, and we'll circle back momentarily with more of this Sunday's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little more.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to nathan@npross.com, nathan@npross.com.
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be A Planner show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
Big dreams and faded dreams.
Okay, welcome back to more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. I was talking about an article that was out on Globe Street this week about the millionaire class that's opting to rent instead of buying. And I had another article that was on Fox Business that is trumpeting the same advice, but I like the way that they phrase the tagline that got my attention is, and this makes sense, this is why people are doing it. They quote a millionaire entrepreneur that said, the value does not match the high price, according, and this is referencing the same Wall Street Journal ad. So that's the issue. It's the issue in all of life. You know, it's not the price so much that dictates the decision to purchase. It's the sell. I mean, the value or to sell. It's the value. And I know I've argued with more than my share of realtors in the past when I was selling a piece of real estate or buying a piece of real estate. And realtors, the pure focus seems to be on price most of the time, not the value. And my favorite rebuttal is, well, you know, how many Mercedes or Porsches, etc., do you think sold today? You know, so don't tell me that there's not room in the market for a higher price. It's finding the right fish to bite that hook based on the value perception, and that seems to always take them a bit aback. But anyway. Let's see, I've got another article on this, concept, and this just goes to show, it depends on which end of the pond you're swimming in, but there was an article on Globe Street again, globestreet.com, that, shows that home ownership beats renting, better than renting in some cities. Let's take a look at that. Let's see. The subtitle is typical monthly rent across the country is $2,063. That's an average of sorts that they've come up with. I've seen other numbers bantered about. But they say the average monthly rent is $2,063 compared with the typical mortgage payment of $1,827. I can almost bet you, without having even read the rest of the article, that they're not including things like property taxes, insurance, etc., because most of these types of articles just simply focus on the monthly payment. And, of course, as any of us know that own real estate, there's so much more to it than that, especially if you live in some of the you know, the metro markets with the highest insurance rates and taxes. But anyway, let's read a little of this together. Although, and by the way, I'll say it again because some people have come on since we started. These the articles I've linked out on our news page at BAPlannerShow.com, and then you go to the new or the resources tab, and you'll see the news section open up, and videos are another tab, which I'm woefully behind on. I've got a lot of them cataloged, though, and I'll be coming back soon with more videos, especially some newer videos by David Swikert, the Republican from Arizona, that's got his hands numerically around the sad state of our cumulative debt and deficit, et cetera. I'll have a bunch of those up someday here soon. In any event, according to this report, monthly mortgage payments are less expensive than rent in nearly half of the 50 largest U.S. metro markets. I've got other articles that'll contradict that, but there is a site, and again, it's realtor.com. They put out a monthly rental report, and I've linked one of those articles there in our news section. But if you go to that link, you'll see you can back up a level, and you can find the report from every month for over a long period. So they issue an update, and of course, realtor.com is in the business of transacting real estate, so you would naturally assume it's going to be they're going to do better if they can convince you that buying is the way to go versus renting. So just keep that as your backdrop when you look there. But the findings in this article contradict a realtor.com rental report last month that found renting was more financially advantageous than buying. So I'm sorry, I got my wires reversed. Realtor.com is still saying it's better to rent than buy, but they're closing the gap. Affordability is benefiting, and that's with quotes around it. Affordability, that's a class of housing, is benefiting from recent dips in mortgage rates, which have now reached their lowest level since early 2023, according to Zillow Home Loans. 25% of sellers have cut prices because they're listening to normal realtors, as I just mentioned, on their properties, and inventory is up 22% compared with a year ago. So home buyers are gaining some bargaining power, is what that supposedly translates to. At the time, rents are 34% more than they were before the pandemic. That's a big number. I've seen 20 to 25%. I haven't seen this. Maybe the first one I've seen that says it's 34%. Of the 22 markets, and you know, this all makes sense. The reason we talk about this topic is because our clients invest in multifamily partnerships, or you know, they're an investor in multifamily real estate partnership syndications. And I know many of you are already invested. If you're not, now's the time to start looking. The deals are starting to thaw out. You're getting with the recent interest rates, even just this week being cut, it's getting us closer to an equilibrium of interest rate and cap rate. And without going into all the details, let's just say that that affects the valuation to the point where now some of these apartment owners, these partnerships that have debt that needs to be refinanced, they're ever a step closer to either a refinance or a sale. And so I'm starting to see, as I mentioned on the Friday show, I believe it was Friday, it was either Thursday or Friday this week, I've had several transactions sent to me by clients wanting me to review them, where, you know, they're actually good deals, because what's happening is people that have to refinance the three-year bridge type debt that was so common over the last 2 years and probably 2.5 years are now the refinance periods. 3 years is typical. The loan either has to be refinanced or paid off. So how do you do that? Well, if you're talking about paying it off, you got to find a buyer, obviously. And sellers are making deals because there's not enough doors open. There's not enough loan windows open at lenders that are willing to refinance these loans. If you haven't executed, in spite of the fact that rents have gone up, according to this article, according to Zillow, gone up 34%, there's still a lot of transactions out there that are not qualified to refinance. The extensions that you can get, most of the three-year bridge debt has 2 1-year extensions as part of their term, but that's subject to the lender being willing to do that and you paying 1%. And if you've got a 300 plus unit complex that, you know, was, I don't know, $50 million back in the day, and you got to remember the loan to value that's been available on mortgages has been in the dumper. It's been 55% to 65%. You got a big number that you've got to hit to do a refinance. And so sellers are cutting deals where they're just trying to salvage what small piece of the overall capital is still available by taking a discount. And I know of some very solid syndicators that are having trouble getting refinanced. So that creates opportunities. And if you're the one on the buying end and you've got access to a partnership that has access to certain lenders that would really like to get a new borrower on the hook for that loan. In other words, lenders don't want to own properties. I know you've probably heard the acronym REO, you know, real estate owned is what that stands for. That is not a category that most lenders want to be in. I mean, true, there are some that seemingly make a great living out of taking properties back because they've got other people they can sell them to. But, you know, it's a dicey time right now for those that are already in a transaction that maybe hasn't quite performed. And again, it's not necessarily indicative of a bad lead partner or syndicator. It's more indicative of insurance rates having tripled or quadrupled over the past 2 or 3 years, and property taxes have gone off the charts. And yes, interest rates have clicked up. The Fed raised the Fed funds rate 11 times, if I recall correctly, over the last 2.5 years. And that affects the cash flow that's been available to pay debt. Forget about paying partners. It's just the amount of money to cover the debt service. Let's do this. We're right on the mark to take our last break. Let's go ahead and take that break, and we will circle back momentarily with more of this week's real estate news.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to nathan@npross.com, nathan@npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. But I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control and make the
okay, welcome back to the last segment of this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And before we leave the article where there's markets that, at the moment at least, have typical mortgage payments that offer a savings over the typical rent. Now, again, it's not including certain costs, which we'll talk about here in a second before we wrap this up. New Orleans is at the top of the list. If you look at the top 22, $446 a month savings. And there is a caveat here I'm going to get to in a second. And Houston is down, halfway point on that list. A monthly savings of $182, theoretically, is the savings of buying over renting. But I can tell you, there's no property tax or insurance in that number, so I can pretty much with certainty say that there is no savings in Houston and most of these markets, because again, as it says here, let me make sure I got this correct. It says the report notes that there are other expenses to consider in both scenarios. Homeowners pay taxes, insurance, and utilities, as well as ongoing maintenance. While renters typically need to purchase insurance, renter insurance is nowhere near as expensive as homeowner insurance, though. So that's a big difference right there. And they often also, renters that is, often, often pay extra for parking, pets, and utilities, which that's somewhat more manageable if you're a tenant than it is if you're an owner, because almost every market that I'm tracking, and we track quite a few of them, Houston, Dallas, Austin, San Antonio, in Texas, and then numerous places around the East Coast, Florida, and going over as far as Phoenix, in the West. So we can see on a monthly basis how these trends are developing, and I can just tell you, I can watch the impact on developers that are putting up new apartments. There are still some. We in fact, one of the articles I put up today and yesterday talked about the deliverables that have come into the market. I mean, they've slowed down. There's fewer monthly permits being produced, but there still were significant deliveries coming in the current pipeline. But anyway, this is something to consider. I've looked at this both in the U.S. market. I've tracked it overseas in Thailand, where I live, the city of Bangkok. And I'm just telling you, one thing I always do, whether it's Bangkok or whether it's Houston, is get on well, Bangkok doesn't have an MLS, but there's plenty of sites out there that show what a property, particularly in the condo market, you can get a feel for what they sold for when they were first built. Like, I've looked at some that are 20, 25 years old, and then you can look at what they're renting for today, and you can see why. I'm going to tell you, and I'm going to keep telling you, investing in a principal residence is a lifestyle choice. It is not a good investment choice, at least in most Texas cities. And there are some exceptions. Austin is probably one, although a lot of the value that, people were seeing has significantly slowed, and in some cases reversed. But, you know, the Texas market in general has never been like California, as you know, where you literally just tried to grab on to the home ownership train at some level because you knew it was going to go up and return significant amount of money. The clients that I have that are getting a significant chunk of cash, let's say, for their home are the ones that bought back in the 60s and early 70s, where, you know, they just bought a home not thinking about, you know, 2024, and now they turn around and a home that was $40,000 back then is worth, you know, $500,000 plus. Now, I would argue that's inflation in most cases, which is okay because it illustrates what we say often, which is a real estate investment gets the benefit of inflation. A lot of things don't. If you think about hard assets like real estate versus non-hard assets, like maybe an annuity, a fixed annuity, things of that nature that don't have many adjusters built in for inflation, you know, real estate keeps up, and that's why it's a critically important part of your investment portfolio. Okay, well, let's see what other we've got. About 10 minutes left. August of 2024, we were talking about realtor.com earlier, and the August 2024 rental report they have shows that rental affordability has increased over this point a year ago. And let's just look at some of the highlights here. Marks the 13th, August 2024 marks the 13th month of year-over-year rent decline. Now, that obviously depends on which market you're in, because I can tell you if you're looking at Dallas-Fort Worth, it's up 2.5%. San Antonio is down 1.6%. This is over the past 12 months. Austin is down 5.6%. And so, again, you know, this Realtor.com article is based on a wider sampling than, you know, the submarkets that I'm looking at, or the cities that I'm looking at in Texas. Asking rents, and again, this is overall nationally, asking rents dipped by $5 or a negative 0.3% year over year. The median asking rent in the 50 largest metros registered at $1,753. Which you may recall, the article I just read talking about the 22 areas where it's better to own instead of rent, they were showing average rent of $2,063. But this population or this sampling shows $1,753 being the average 50 largest metros, and that is down by $2. From last month, and $7 lower than the August 2022 peak. Median rent declined in all size categories, with larger declines in the smaller size units. Studios are down 1,455. That's I'm sorry, that's the average. $1,455. It's down $20. And one bedrooms are down in a similar fashion, et cetera. So, you know, this is a bigger sampling. And again, I'm always going to caution you when you're looking at investing, try not to look as much at the averages, or if you're looking at an average, look at the average in a certain submarket. So I mentioned earlier some numbers regarding the Beltway 8, I-45 South market, and, you know, Med Center was another one. So look at those area statistics. Again, we look at both numbers, but when we get to the point of trying to decide ultimately what the math looks like on a given transaction to help the client understand what they're signing up for, we're going to drill down to the submarket, because that's really what you're buying in most cases. Despite the improved top-level trend, affordability varies widely and did not improve everywhere. Well, we know that because that's the definition of average. None of us are average. We're all normal, or we're all individual, I guess. And so you got to look at the specific market. The median rent for a typical 0 to 2 bedroom unit in Miami, as an example, is 1.4 times as high as the estimated maximum affordable rent for the median household. So Miami's got a problem. They've got an Austin problem, let's call it. Oklahoma City, on the other hand, is the most affordable rental market in August of 2024. The median rent for a typical 0 to 2 bedroom unit, so studios, 1 bedrooms and 2 bedrooms, was just 61% of the estimated maximum affordable rent. So that's, if you're a tenant, that's a good market to be trying to find a place to live. Affordability eroded most in more affordable Midwest markets like St. Louis, Cincinnati, and Minneapolis, which saw faster rent growth. Let's see, what else is notable? Well, they've got some nice graphs on this page. And again, this is linked on our news page. And you can not only look at this, you can back up a level on that site and pick assorted other months' reports. So they're 12-month year-on-year type reporting, and you can see the trend. Each one of them has a chart or a graph that shows the median rent and the median rent year on year, whether it's going up or down in each case. So that's it's a nice resource, albeit again, I question at times some of the data on all of these data sources, because all that matters is the one you're looking at, the area you're looking at. And, you know, you're trying to stay in an area where you can make money. And that's what, you know, when we look at these transactions, we're trying to focus, or we're dialing in on what's the cash flow look like. And that's something that that's what our investors are trying to capture. Let's see. Let's look at an article from earlier this week. Cap rates normalize amid stabilizing market. This is an important trend to watch if you're in the apartment, the multifamily investment space. And this was an article on the 19th of September that was in the, let's say this is a Globe Street article again. Globe Street's, if you haven't already realized, is one of our primary data sources. They are really good with the multifamily market in terms of what they study and what they survey. Says over the past several weeks, real estate experts, that's a relative term, have seen signs of stabilization in the market, particularly in the multifamily sector. However, they caution that valuations may not immediately respond to the 50 basis rate cut announced by the Fed earlier this week as the industry adjusts to a new normal. And they quote one of the directors of mortgage banking at Berkadia, which is another data gathering source. The bid-ask spread that's been persistent for the last 18 months has largely come together. In other words, they're closing the gap. We're seeing a lot more groups who were on the sidelines now coming out to acquire deals. I'm seeing that on the different deal transaction sites that we check. And it's not that they're, it's not just the fact that they're, you know, there's activity, there's people coming together, but they're coming together in a way that's highly attractive. Shorter terms to pay out, 3 years in many cases. The people that have sat on the sidelines normally have strong balance sheets. They've also got strong cash positions in many cases. So they're able to get deals done. Lenders know it and buyers know it. And if you've got lenders in your camp that have dealt with you, they trust you, they know you're able to perform, and you've got some cash, well, then you're in the driver's seat when it comes to acquisition. And in any event, this was just before the rate cut, and this gentleman that was being interviewed from Berkadia said that we fully expect the Fed to lower the overnight rate, which they did on Tuesday, I believe it was, Tuesday or Wednesday now. We just think that's already been priced in at the longer end of the curve, and that's how real estate is valued generally. So what he's saying is it's going to take a while to turn the train around because so many investors have already assumed the rate cut that we had. They also agree, and this is critical, that rate caps are approaching historically normal levels after a period of extremes. I think the people who are waiting for 3% cap rates to come back are going to be waiting for a very, very long time, Mr. Sinberg states. Conversely, I think the groups that are waiting for this immense distress to occur and cap rates to expand at 7%, in other words, they're going to go higher, are also going to be waiting for a very, very long time. In other words, there are deals now to be had, and they're probably approaching a level that's as good as they're going to get. And at some point, we could be back in to the higher rates. We think cap rates are approaching normal levels, and the cost of debt is also at levels that make these cap rates somewhat attractive. Okay, well, we're at the end of the show. Appreciate you tuning in today. We'll be back this Thursday at 2 p.m. and Friday at 11. And hopefully this time next week we can be talking cybersecurity. It's a fascinating story that took place this past week. But anyway, thank you for tuning in. And we hope to see you or hear you, or you hear us, coming up this Thursday. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.